I have so many probably read tabs. I should probably read this, but I never will. But I'm going to keep the tab open.
I don't know. I'm not one to talk to you about tabs, friend. I am all tabs all the time. Hello, everyone. Yep. It's Molly. Welcome to Make Me Smart. So many tabs were open that we almost forgot to start the show again.
So many tabs.
Again.
So many tabs. Well,
it's Happy Hour Friday,
again, thank
or
God
economics
for the engineers.
On tap, as we like to call it. Welcome, everybody, on the YouTubes. I got to get over to the thing.
Yeah.
I made a mistake.
We have it here? Yes, we do. All right. There we go. Friday.
Check me out. I'm having like a beer. I'm even going to pour it in a glass. Yes. Founders Porter.
What are you having?
It's kind of Halloween-y. Dark, rich, and sexy. I bought it to make brisket because you got to put it. It says it on the label.
It's a beer. It's a beer, people. It's a beer.
Look, it was awkward for all of us, but it's just descriptors about beer. I bought it to make brisket with.
Oh, good. How was the brisket?
And now I
have five
more in my fridge, you know. Oh, I made it. Yeah,
gotta
it was delicious.
Got to use them. I'm having my standard Elysian space dust because that's what was in the fridge.
Of course you are.
In the Kaipier glass,
nerd.
By the way.
Guys, it's Friday.
Kaipier glass. Yes,
I'm
it is
so
Friday.
I also am using the Kaipier glass because this is literally the only beer pint glass I have in the house.
Nice.
One of us is not a big beer person, clearly. I'm like, I just have
that's
this one that work sent me.
It's all good. It's all good.
All right. What do we got? Should we do the news?
Hey, have you gotten your coasters yet? I haven't gotten my coasters. Stephanie Patterson, if you're listening.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten my coasters. Okay.
Oh God, that is a really good beer. Guys,
we have converted her,
maybe I've just finally discovered the kind of beer that I like.
Well, look, there's something to be said for that.
I'm not making the other joke, even though it would be obvious and really easy to make.
I'm not even sure we ever actually got on the rails with this podcast because it's already off the rails.
I'm sorry. It's nowhere near a rail. I think it actually that's the best description of my mental state that there ever has been, which is nowhere near a rail today.
Yeah.
So nowhere good, though.
Or
I'm going to have a little more of this while you get the show on track.
Okay. You drink and I'll do my two little news items. The first is I've decided it's going to be a go-to until the end of voting. Notice I'm not saying election day because people have been voting for a very long time. It's the U.S. Mm-hmm. Elections Project database run by the guy at the University of Florida talking about how many people have voted as a percentage of 2016 total turnout rather. Excuse me. So nationwide, 38.2% of the entire 2016 general election turnout has already voted. I think this number is stunning. 71% of Texans, that is to say, turnout in Texas is 71% of the 2016 turnout already. That is just so amazing to me. It's just like mind-boggling.
It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, how close are we to getting to the point where, we're going to get to the point where by actual technical election day, as many people will have voted in 2016?
So I saw a thing the other day.
There.
2016 turnout.
All right, so
somebody Google this or DuckDuckGo this or something. Tony this. That's a new word. Tony this. And Tony will look it up and put it in the Slack. I'm going to Tony this. So I saw a thing the other day that turnout for 2016 was like 135-ish million voters, and they're anticipating 155-ish million this year. So that gives you some clue as to the extra turnout and the motivation and whether or not we'll be able to get there. I mean, if we get, 70% of 155 million, that's pretty close to total.
I mean, that would be remarkable.
Anyway.
That would actually be remarkable.
It'd be extraordinary.
Good job, America. Welcome to your democracy already in progress. We're delighted to have you.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
For sure.
If nothing else comes of 2020, at least people are like, civic responsibility.
For sure. I think, there are some good things that have come out of 2020, as absolutely hellscape-ish as it's been. The other one that comes immediately to mind is I think people are taking climate change much more seriously this year.
Yeah, I agree.
Right? With the fires out here and with the intensity of the hurricanes. Yeah. You've done a lot of this, actually, on tech.
Well, I have, and what's so interesting is that everybody I've been talking to, I ask, how is business, basically? What are the conversations like about climate? And what I've discovered is that when a pandemic like this comes along, it makes you realize that the thing that you predicted to be way, way out in the future that was sort of a hypothetical can happen. And that yeah. has also changed people's right. thinking about climate change. Like, if you can have right. a disaster that shuts down the world, right? Shuts down the yep. world. Then yeah. maybe extreme climate change could arrive, I don't know, right now.
Yep. For sure.
Yeah.
Man, there are some good comments on the live stream. Holy cow. Some really good ones.
You guys are so
also,
smart.
somebody called this a gateway beer for you. Klaus Laumdrup.
I think it kind of is a gateway
it's a
beer.
Gateway beer. Could be.
Porter. Right? Could be.
Okay. So that is my consistent news item, and I'll do it again next Friday, which will, of course, be the last Friday before the voting ends. The news of the day item that I've got is this from the New York Times today. It was everywhere, but the president of the United States has signed an executive order this week that will expand his ability to hire and fire tens of thousands of members of the civil service, the federal civil service, which is often maligned as the bureaucracy. But honestly, those are the people making the gears work that get you your Social Security checks and make collect your taxes and do livestock inspections if you're in, you know, the Department of Agriculture. I mean, all of these things and people that are needed to make the government actually work. The president now has given himself the authority via executive order to hire and fire tens of thousands of them. So that means that instead of the relatively small proportion of political appointees that are in the federal civil service right now, there would be many, many more. There could be many, many more. And that is problematical for a number of reasons, not the least of which is the people doing the, for example, livestock inspections could be political appointees. And I don't think we want that. Now, because this is an executive order, it can be overturned by another executive order should there be a change of administration on the 3rd of November. But this is deeply distressing and should be to anybody who cares about good and efficient governing as opposed to conspiracy theories about the deep state.
Yeah,
that's where I am.
Wasn't there something that's also in here about how it could lead to essentially a leave behind of loyalists? That even if the administration changes,
right.
that there would be, you know, that the administration might have the outgoing Trump administration could potentially fire a bunch of people, hire a bunch of loyalists, and then sort of leave them behind.
Yes, absolutely.
As their own deep state,
a whole new deep state. I've said this before on this podcast. I think one of the really big challenges for a President Biden, should he win, in addition to all the other challenges he will have to face in the course of being president and the pandemic, will be undoing the structural damage that President Trump has done to the institutions of this government, whether it's politicization of the State Department, installing his cronies in positions of inspector general authority, which he has done in a number of ways, as we've seen. In some ways, the presidency of the United States that's up for election on November the 3rd is a poison chalice.
And if you think that we're being unfair to the cronies, I think it is. I saw a tweet today to the effect that, like, it's very surprising that in debates so far, no questions have been asked about the number of Trump appointees who have been arrested, gone to jail, found themselves in otherwise, you know, legally dubious circumstances. Like, that is of note when you consider who might be appointed to replace career civil servants whose only loyalty is to keeping this country running.
Totally is. Totally is. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm just mulling over in my mind two things. Number one, Kristen Welker last night from NBC News, I thought, did an amazing job. Mm-hmm. She was, you know, firm and snuck in fact checks and all of this jazz. I'm just wondering do we need to go down that rabbit hole in a presidential debate? Can we not talk about, like, foreign policy or climate change or the economy? I don't know.
I guess it depends on how you think of the rabbit hole. I don't know. This is obviously a much longer conversation. I think, like, there are real questions about corruption that –
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure. and that's kind of one of them, potentially.
Yep.
And trust. Yeah.
I don't know. No,
yeah,
I get it.
Though.
I get it.
It's true. I mean, I guess I would prefer a little longer spent on climate change. Like, we're somebody also tweeted, like, she said toward the end of the debate, you know, we're running out of time. I really want to address climate change for a second. And they were like, truer words. Truer
right,
words.
Like, for a second. Done.
For a second. Because we're running out of time. Because. This is a very Kai Ryssdal item for me to bring today.
Oh, my goodness.
Because. Okay. Much like the election project, this is just like me geeking out on an infographic that currently is of really primarily local interest, but is of statewide interest in California. And just as a matter of like policy, jurisprudence, and unintended consequences is freaking fascinating. So this taxfairnessproject.org put out an interactive map of what it calls homeowner tax subsidies in California. So for those who don't know, California has a roughly 40-year-old law called Prop 13, which essentially freezes property taxes at the value of the time you bought the home up to some certain year. And I can't remember what the year is. But it basically means that if you've been in your business or your house for a really, really long time, you pay property taxes as though it still costs $150,000 instead of $9 million.
I have a neighbor who moved into her house in 1955. She probably pays like $4 in property taxes.
She probably pays like $4.
On a house that's worth $2 million, for reals.
Yep. And so what's happened is that, this is the law that has gutted public education in California. This is the law that is the reason that the state has dramatically uneven tax revenue to the tune of. So, and I'm like shocked that this map took so long to come out, because what it shows is that the Bay Area alone is responsible for $5 billion in what is essentially a yearly subsidy to people who are like property rich and have to pay taxes as though, you know, they bought this house like 40 years ago. Right. And it is like fascinating and enraging, because home values being what they are, you've got like a a tax subsidy that's like $50,000, $60,000, that is essentially unrealized revenue from these properties. And then anybody who comes along and manages to scrape together the money to buy a new house, then their subsidy is zero because they're paying the full value. And it's so frustrating because there's like nothing you can do about it now, right? You're not going to all of a sudden say, sorry, lady who's been in her house since 1954, you now have to pay $40,000 a year in taxes. Like, because your house is worth $10 million or $2 million or whatever it's worth. I find it fascinating, obviously, because I'm obsessed with housing, the Bay Area, and Prop 13, how it starves our schools, because I ran my school auction for like 4 years, and I know the dollar amount that I had to raise to subsidize a public school, elementary school. But also, it's just a lesson in how freaking infographics work. They work. We could have gotten rid of Prop 13 like decades ago if we had this sucker. This is insane.
Yeah, totally true. Totally true. I have two thoughts. Number one, and this is people are going to at me about this. Direct democracy is stupid. Direct democracy is stupid.
In some ways, it definitely is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Number two, this really the infographics is super cool, but the larger picture is how idiotic and skewed tax programs are across the country. I mean, I'm sure we could go to Iowa or Nebraska or Virginia, you know, and find similar examples of unintended consequences of tax policy that have just changed the dynamic in so many ways.
I know. Anyway. Well, and you look at who writes that tax policy, right? It's like it's the landed gentry, and redlining keeps people out of the landed gentry and then keeps them from buying houses. And so, yes, like I completely agree. This is not just a Molly is obsessed with Bay Area housing story. It is sort of the ongoing story of how a lot of times we think there are easy solutions for things. And then you look at this. Some people in the chat want you to expand on direct democracy. For those who don't know, California has a very specific form of direct democracy in which if you can get enough signatures,
well, look,
you can get just about anything on the ballot. And then we voters are in the position of being like, I guess I understand this dialysis thing.
Oh, my God.
I elected
don't even
someone
start
to take care of this for me.
Yeah. Somebody who lives in Michigan won't understand the dialysis thing because it's bananas, because it's been on the ballot twice in less than a year. But look, let me give you my 30-second riff on direct democracy is stupid. We live in a representative democracy, which means that we cede, C-E-D-E, part of our decision-making authority to those whom we elect to represent us. And we count on them to make decisions in the greater good. And that arguably in America in 2020 has failed, right? In fact, not arguably. We count on our elected representatives, whether it's the school board, the city council, the state legislature, the governor, or the Senate and the Congress and the President of the United States, to do what is in the best interest of us and the nation. And you can make a really good case, which I will not do here because I'm using up my 30 seconds, that representative democracy is not doing what it's supposed to do. And so increasingly in states, California being the most biggest example, people are turning to direct democracy. And direct democracy is stupid because the will of the masses is not – wow, I'm going to get in such trouble. The will of the masses is not what is best for everyone. It's just not. It's not sensible. It's not forward-looking. It's not thought through. It's reactive and gut and emotional. And you can't run a country like that. You can't run a school board like that. All right, I'm sorry.
Yep.
I'm done. Off my,
I'm totally
off
with
my
you. I back you. You're going to get ats, and I don't care, and I back you. And I totally understand that one of the ats is going to be that money in politics, you know, pushes the pendulum in the far other direction, where you also cannot run a democracy based on bought and sold politicians. I get it. But this is an exact example of where, like, Landa Gentry was like, we never want to pay more taxes. And now, 40 years later, the entire state's being starved. Just as one example.
Let us give the shout out here to ourselves. I know, right? Let us give the because we get to do what we want. No, I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. Let us give the shout out here to ourselves in the conversation we had on Tuesday with Heidi Scherholz from, Center for Responsive Politics, Center for Public Integrity. Help me out. Somebody, anybody.
I think I want to
anyway,
say
she was
politics.
Great. Mm-hmm. Okay. She was great. We had a conversation about dark money in this election cycle and where it came from and what might be able to fix it. I recommend it to you highly. Center for Responsive Politics. Thank you, Marissa Cabrera.
Yep.
Anyway, so yes, that. Oh my God.
Because we know.
349.
We hear you.
Yeah.
I know. Holy cow. Should we just turn to the smiling? By the way, though, love our YouTube chat. Love you guys.
Yeah.
Like getting to have these conversations with smart people. This is the jam. Yeah. This is the jam.
For sure. Okay. Super quick. I saw a tweet this morning from the McDonald's social media account, and it went like this. I'm just going to read it, and I'm going to tell you why I laughed. It's always, when is the McRib coming back? And never, how are you, person who runs the McDonald's account? You know, come on. Shout out to the poor schlubs running the McDonald's social media account. Come on, man. I'm all down for a good corporate social media account with personality. You know, come on.
When is the McRib coming back, though?
He says as he finishes the beer. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. You finished the beer already?
Yours.
Dang.
Oh, I should make it a rule to bring two in here because whatever.
You really should because, dude, shiz real right now.
we're going like a half an hour today. I don't even know what's going on.
I know. Who cares? We're in charge. Unless music plays to the contrary, which could definitely happen.
I know, right?
Ben Holiday.
Totally. You have to believe Melissa on the back talk to on the talk back to.
She's like, give him the hook. Give
Ben
him the
going,
hook, Ben.
Now, God, now hit them.
Get him out of here.
Oh my God! Oh my God! The dogs are here.
Yes.
Good dogs are here.
All right, so. As not to keep our producers here all night long on a Friday evening posting the show, I will quickly say that I am delighted to hear that the trend that I feel like I was super on top of like 2 years ago is getting a ton of money. RVShare.com has raised over $100 million because you can rent RVs, people. Did you know this? It is the greatest vacation of all time. You just rent someone's nice RV, take it for a drive ski. A COVID-free drive ski, And not surprisingly, RVshare.com saw a 650% increase in bookings from April to May of 2020.
I have to tell you, my wife is not in complete jest talking about renting an RV for the five of us who are in the Los Angeles area and driving east to see child number one, who is in Washington, D.C.
Do it.
I don't have that in me. I do not. I love my children. I love my family, but I will not. No. Mm-mm.
Really? Okay. We'll talk about this offline. The key is rubber gloves because there's a tube that the poo comes out of and whatever. But dude, it is the most fun vacation I think I've ever had. I really was like, I have nothing to complain about with this vacation. It's so fun.
All right.
RV.
All right.
It's okay. The jam.
I will maintain an open mind. Ben, hit the music. Save us from ourselves.
That's
LA,
it.
Out
That's
east
our show.
And back. That's it. That's it.
So We're, fun.
A little too much sharing here.
So
oh,
fun.
My goodness. Okay, so here's what we are doing on Tuesday, which is the Tuesday before the first Tuesday in November, which is, as we all know, the day that the voting ends in the presidential election cycle of 2020. If you are under 30... and voting for the first time, first of all, if you're under 30 and voting for the first time, why? Because you've been past 18 for a while now. But number one, tell us what has stopped you from voting in the past. Why didn't you?
Yeah.
And number two, tell us why you're voting now. Honestly, for real.
We want to know.
Send us your responses. Voice memos are the way to go on this podcast. MakeMeSmartAtMarketplace.org. Instructions for do that, by the way, Tony put them in the show notes.
He did. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera, sometimes in real time. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. He's staying late tonight. Ben Hethcote produces video with the help of our... Oh, we ran out the clock.
This rarely
God, we really
happens,
broke all the rules.
Tell. Look at
our
this.
Do-it-all
like
intern Ethan
minutes.
Parrots is going to be
bad.
Mad at us. I feel bad.
Wait, what's he drinking?
You guys
Somebody
are all
slack
great.
Me.
Erica
Somebody
Phillips,
slack me. We
Ben Holliday,
we would.
Daniel Ramirez, Donna Tam, Sitara Nieves. All amazing.
Oh,
He's
man,
drinking water. Okay, bye.
All right, everybody,
Monday.
There we go.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.